Chapter 27. Austin turned the rented Renault off the turquoise coast highway onto a road that twisted and turned like a spastic snake. The road ran for several miles through cultivated countryside and sleepy villages. As the car rounded a bend, ruins could be seen on the crest of a hill. Austin parked next to a cluster of buildings. The abandoned village had become a state-run tourist attraction. The inevitable ticket seller was waiting to take their modest admission fee. He pointed the way toward the village and went to intercept a car with two men in it that pulled up next to the Renault. An ascending mule path went past an outdoor restaurant, souvenir shop, and several freelance vendors peddling their wares. After a hike of a few minutes, Austin and Karina had an unimpeded view of the village. Hundreds of roofless houses baked under the hot sun. Plaster had peeled off the outside of the silent structures to expose their rough stucco walls. A few houses had been taken over by squatters who had spread their laundry out to dry. The only other sign of life was a satanic-faced goat that munched contentedly on a weed-choked garden.
"It's hard to believe that this place was once full of life," Karina said. "People making love. Women crying out in labor. Fathers bragging about their newborns. Children celebrating birthdays and baptisms. Mourning the passing of old ones."
Austin was only half listening to Karina rhapsodize. Two men had stopped on the trail about 100 feet behind them. One was taking photos of the goat. They were in their 20s, Austin estimated, both dressed in black pants and short-sleeved white shirts. Their arms were thick and muscular. Their faces were shaded by the brims of their caps and sunglasses. Karina had continued along the mule path. When Austin caught up with her, she was strolling across the courtyard of an abandoned church toward an old man perched on a wall under a shade tree. Decorated bowls and plates were lined up on the wall, which he was using to showcase his wares. Austin greeted the man and asked if he were Mehmet's friend, Salim. The man smiled.
"Mehmet buys my work for the covered bazaar."
"Yes, we know.
He told us where to find you," Karina said.
Salim had the Pablo Picasso look that comes to Mediterranean men of a certain age. The skin on his cheeks and bald head was tanned the color of tan bark, and his face was as unlined as a baby's. Good humor and wisdom lurked in big eyes that were as dark as raisins. He gestured toward his wares.
"Mehmet tells you of my souvenirs," he said.
Austin pulled the navigator figurine from his pocket. "We were looking for something like this."
"Ah,"
Salim said, his face lighting up.
"The eunuch."
He made a horizontal cutting motion with an invisible knife.
"I stop making them. No one buys."
Austin carefully considered the next question. "Does the eunuch have a grandfather?" Salim gave him a puzzled look and then flashed a big-toothed grin. He drew his arms in wide arcs as if they were describing a large circle.
"Buyuk. Big eunuch."
"That's right. Buyuk. Where?"
"In Lise tomb. You understand?"
Austin had noticed the strange Lycian tombs carved high up on the faces of plunging cliffs. The entrances were framed by ornate columns and triangular lintels like classic Greek or Roman temples. In halting English, Salim said he had always been interested in art. As a young man, he explored the countryside with paper pad and charcoal in search of subjects. On one exploration, he had found a Lycian tomb unknown to the people in his village. The tomb was cut into a cliff above the sea, hidden from view by thick vegetation. He had gone inside and discovered a statue in the cave. He sketched it. When he was looking for a subject later to mold in clay, he went back to the sketch.
"Where is the statue now?" Karina said with growing excitement.
Salim pointed to the ground. Earthquake. The cliff had slid into the sea. Karina was visibly disappointed, but Austin persisted. He showed Salim a map of the coast and asked the old man to pinpoint the site of the tomb. Salim tapped the map with his fingertip. Karina clutched Austin's arm.
Kurt, she said, those men were in the hotel last night.
The Turks had paused at the edge of the courtyard and were staring directly at Karina and Austin. Austin remembered the two men he had seen lounging in the lobby. Their arrival at the village was no accident. You're right, he said. They're a long way from Istanbul. He took a handful of lira from his pocket and dropped the bills next to Salim. He picked up a ceramic plate, thanked the old man for the information, and slipped his arm around Karina's waist. He told her to walk as casually as she was able to the church. He guided her through the doorway into the vacant building and edged over to a window that had been stripped of glass and framework. Peering around the edge of the doorframe, he saw the men talking to Salim. The old artist pointed to the church. The men broke off their conversation and headed toward the building. They were no longer sauntering and walked quickly, with purpose in each step. Austin told Karina to climb out a window opening on the opposite wall. He followed her through the opening, and they scrambled up a gravelly path to a hill that overlooked the church. Karina hid in a small chapel built at the top of the hill, and Austin flattened himself to the ground. Their pursuers had separated and set off in opposite directions around the church. They met up again and had a heated discussion. Then they split up and disappeared into the labyrinth of deserted houses. Austin retrieved Karina from the chapel and led the way down the other side of the ridge. They caught a glimpse of something black moving between them and the main road. One man had come around the bottom of the ridge and was going from house to house. Austin pulled Karina into a doorway. He was still holding the plate he had bought from Salim. He stepped out of the doorway, curled the plate into his wrist, and snapped it like a frisbee over a nearby rooftop. There was the sound of the plate shattering and the rattle of gravel kicked up by running feet. Austin and Karina veered off the main path that ran through the village and followed a rocky goat path back to the road. Staying close to the side, they walked about a quarter of a mile back to the village entrance. They headed for the Renault and saw the car that the two men had driven up in parked tight next to theirs. Austin told Karina to wait and went to the snack bar. He came back a minute later holding a corkscrew in his hand.
This is no time for wine, she said with a sour look.
I agree, Austin said. He wiped the sweat from his forehead. A cold beer would be better. He asked Karina to keep watch. He ducked down between the cars as if tying his shoe and jammed the corkscrew point into the other car's tire. He worked the point around until he felt a rubbery puff of air on his hand and mangled the valve for good measure.
What are you doing? Karina said.
I'm making sure our friends get the point, Austin said with a wolfish grin. He slid behind the wheel of the Renault, started the engine, and pulled out onto the road with spinning tires. Austin drove as if he were in the Grand Prix. With Karina map navigating, they headed toward Fethiye, a coastal market and resort town. He drove directly to the harbor. They walked along the quay past the wide-beamed wooden boats that took tourists out on day trips for fishing and scuba diving. He stopped at the tie-up for a wooden boat about 45 feet long. A sign said that the İştuju, the Turkish name for turtle, was for hire on an hourly or daily basis. Austin crossed the short gangway and called out a hello. A man in his 40s came out of the cabin.
I'm Captain Mustafa, he said with a friendly smile. You want to rent the boat?
The boat was not new, but it had been well maintained. Metal was free of rust, and the wood was highly polished. Lines were neatly coiled. Austin surmised that Mustafa was a competent mariner. The fact that he was still in port suggested that he might be hungry for business. Austin pulled out the map he had shown Salim and pointed to the coastline. "Can you take us here, Captain? We might like to do some snorkeling."
"Yes, of course. I know all the good places. When?"
"How about now?" Austin agreed to the price Mustafa threw out and waved at Karina to come aboard. Mustafa cast off the dock lines and eased the boat out of its slip. He pointed the bow into the bay. The boat followed the irregular coastline. They passed resort complexes, a lighthouse, and luxurious villas perched in the hills. Eventually, all signs of human habitation disappeared. Mustafa angled the boat in toward a half-moon cove and killed the engine. He dropped anchor and dug out a couple of beat-up snorkels and masks and fin sets.
"You want to go swimming?"
Austin had been squinting up at a section of cliff where the rock was exposed like an open wound. "Maybe later. I'd like to go ashore." Mustafa shrugged and put the snorkels away. He hung a ladder over the side and brought the dinghy around. Austin rowed the short distance to shore and pulled the dinghy up on the rocky beach. Within a dozen or so feet from the water's edge, the terrain rose at a sharp angle. Using tree trunks and bushes as handholds, Austin climbed until he was about 150 feet above the lagoon. He stood on a ledge that bulged out from the cliff like a Neanderthal's brow. A swath of rock about 100 feet wide had been sheared off as neatly as if by a giant chisel. Austin guessed that the cliff had been weakened by the tomb, in combination with natural faults, and the violent shaking of the earth had jiggled it loose. Huge boulders lay at the base of the cliff and in the water. Austin wondered whether the statue could have survived the crushing fall. Then he waved at Karina, who had been watching his climb, and started down the hill. He was sweating from the heat and exertion, and his shorts and shirt were covered with dirt. He dove into the water fully clothed, giving his body and clothes a quick laundering. When it came to the behavior of foreign tourists, Mustafa was never surprised. He started the engine and headed back to port. Austin cracked a couple of bottles of Turkish beer from the cooler and handed one to Karina.
"Well," she said.
He took a deep gulp and let the cold liquid trickle down his throat. "We'll assume that Salim is correct and the statue was still in the tomb at the time of the earthquake. There's no certainty that it wasn't buried between tons of rock. Even if we do find it, the navigator may be too damaged to be of help."
"Then this was all for nothing?"
"Not at all. I'd like to come back for a closer look." He told Mustafa he wanted to lease the boat for another day.
"Can we come back here tomorrow?" Austin said. "I'd like to do some diving."
"Yes, of course.
You're scientists," Mustafa said.
Austin showed him his NUMA ID. Mustafa had never heard of the agency, but the fact that Austin carried special identification impressed him. Mustafa was glad to get the charter. He had told the boat's owners that if they didn't get him a mate soon, he would quit. Austin took a satellite phone from his backpack and punched in Zavala's number. Zavala was at the port excavation, waiting for Hanley to give him the green light on the sub vet.
"You'll have to tell Hanley that the sub's services are needed elsewhere," Austin said.
He gave Zavala his location and rattled off a shopping list. Zavala said if he could work out the logistics, he would fly to Dalaran the next morning. The boat pulled into its slip at dusk. Austin asked Mustafa to recommend a quiet hotel. The captain suggested a resort that was a 20-minute drive at the end of a twisting road that wound through the wooded hills near Fethiye. The hotel clerk said reservations were usually necessary, but that he had one room with a king-sized bed. Austin hadn't given sleeping arrangements any thought. He asked Karina if she wanted to look for another hotel.
"I'm exhausted," she said. "Still suffering from jet lag. Tell him we'll take it."
They had a quiet dinner in the hotel restaurant at a corner table overlooking the sea. Shish kebab and rice. The lights of Fethiye shimmered in the distance like diamonds on a necklace.
I hate to waste a romantic setting talking business, Austin said. But there are certain issues we should discuss. Most of all, how did those goons track us down to the abandoned village? She looked as if she had been struck by lightning.
Balthazar.
Austin smiled faintly. You told me your benefactor was off limits to suspicious minds.
He's got to be involved. He was the only one I told about the National Geographic photographer. He arranged for the statue to be moved. Saxon warned me about him.
We knew all that before now. What changed your mind? She fidgeted in her chair.
Before we left for Istanbul, I called Balthazar's representative and told him where we were going and why. It was part of our original financing agreement, and I didn't see anything wrong with it at the time. Balthazar was the one who financed the recovery of the Baghdad cash.
She realized the implication of her words.
Dear God, Balthazar has wanted the statue all along. But why?
Let's back up a bit, Austin said. Assume he was behind the theft. Why would he try to prevent us from tracking down the statue's twin?
He obviously doesn't want anyone to see it for whatever reason.
Maybe we'll know why after tomorrow. He glanced at his watch. Sure you're satisfied with the sleeping arrangements? We haven't known each other very long. Karina reached out and touched his hand.
I feel as if I have known you several lifetimes, Mr. Austin.
Shall we call it a night? They took the elevator up to their room, and Austin walked out on the balcony to give Karina time to change. He was gazing at the reflection of lights in the sea when Karina came up and slipped her arm around his waist. He felt the warmth of her body against his. He turned and was greeted by a silky kiss. She was wearing a long, white cotton nightgown, but the simple garment did little to disguise her supple figure.
What about your jet lag? Austin said.
Karina's voice was low and cool as she wound her arms around his neck.
I just got over it.